Good morning again. I'm Jim Dewey in for Mary Griffith on The Mary Griffith Show, and I am excited today because I get to introduce and interview a couple of lovely ladies who are involved in the production of Glass Menagerie coming to Bluff City Theater, opening really 1 week from last night for a preview show, but the main opener is a week from tonight, and it will run through the 29th at Bluff City Theater in Hannibal. So allow me to introduce first the directors, Sydney Grossberg-Runga.
Hi.
And Amanda, played by Lori McConnell.
Good morning.
Lori McConnell, who will be playing Amanda, I guess, first of all. We'll get to the specific details about tickets and that sort of thing later, but let's talk first of all, and Sydney, I'm going to let you go first.
Sure.
Tell us about Glass Menagerie. A lot of people have heard about it. Almost everyone, I think, at least everyone over 20 has probably heard of Tennessee Williams.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
The Glass Menagerie is a really beautiful play. It's autobiographical to a degree, and it is a memory play. So Tom, who is the character based on Williams, introduces the play and takes you through a time in his life with his sister and his mom that follow him and has been following him for the past 10 years as he's been off on his own. It's a really amazing look at family and what financial stress does to family.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to tell too, I don't like to tell too much about the
sure.
story. It's about Williams as a budding writer, and you know, so it's also about a lot about the artist and the struggles you go through and hard decisions you have to make if you are driven to be an artist in terms of life choices.
And he certainly lived that part too. This
yes.
was not his first attempt
right.
by any means, but
no.
it is the one that broke him.
It is. He had written a few plays before, one that was intended to Broadway with the Theater Guild that didn't quite make it, and then Tennessee Williams was an amazing recycler of his work. Glass Menagerie had bits and pieces of it in a number of his short stories and a few of his short plays that then he pulled together, and his journals, he journaled mm-hmm. like crazy, and pulled all together, and he also pulled a lot from life. But one of the things that, you know, always strikes me about this play is, in this world, I think most of us believe that Tennessee Williams' father skipped town when he was young. And I think that was maybe a little bit of wish fulfillment in the play, because Tennessee Williams' father lived with his mother until he died.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
But I think most of us feel like his father left. We also forget that he had another brother. So it's his examination of a part of his life. And I do think that in Laura, there's a lot of his sister, but there's a lot of him in Laura, parts of himself that he feels like he left behind when he left his home.
So when we call it an autobiography, we're not saying it's an action by action, word by word autobiography.
Right.
It's more of his feelings of what it was growing up in his family.
Yes. And it is autobiographical, but it's Tennessee Williams was almost in equal part a poet and a playwright. I mean, he wrote books of poetry that were published when he was young that are not, I mean, his poetry is not as well known as his plays,
right.
obviously. But he was, I mean, his initial goal as a writer was to be a poet. It shifted really quickly. But his initial, I mean, when he was young and in college and right out of college, for a while he wanted to be a journalist, mostly because he thought he could make a living. But This is exploring his family, and what we're doing, if you could see Lori, you would know that so often Amanda is an old woman. I mean, you know, an way older woman. She's mm-hmm. kind of past middle age. She's in her 60s, early 70s, a lot of times when she's played on stage. But if you think about having a 22-year-old and a 24-year-old in the 1930s,
yeah.
Amanda is in her mid-40s, not really her mid-50s, 60s. So we are using actors that are much more the age as described and written in the script. I think that older version comes from him, Williams, being fortunate enough to get Laurette Taylor to play Amanda in the first place. And she was in her 60s when she played it, and probably looked a little older. But, I mean, to our eyes, certainly looked older. And that sort of has been perpetuated a lot in playing it. But I've always felt like, if I were to ever have this fabulous opportunity that I have now, that I would want Amanda to be in her 40s.
Well, let's bring in Amanda then, played by Lori McConnell. And Lori, first of all, welcome.
Thank you so much. And I just have to say, I'm so thrilled to be back in Quincy. I lived here in 1999 and 2000.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And I jumped out of an airplane.
Yeah.
And I saw a lot of baseball games and drove over that gorgeous bridge, so I'm thrilled to be back.
We're glad to have you. Let's talk a little bit about the character Amanda, as Sydney mentioned, generally played by an older person. So this is going to have to change maybe the way that you play the character as opposed to the way others have.
Well, I think that we all remember, if we've reached a certain age, that you felt very differently at 48 than you felt at 58. I think there are different needs and different memories change over the course of your lifetime. So I think some of the things that Amanda talks about in The Glass Menagerie are maybe a little fresher memories for me than for some other Amandas, just because I'm a little closer to that time. Mm-hmm. And then I personally am just very immature, so I remember my youth. So I think that's a lot of Amanda's, that her, we've all known those people whose best day was the day they graduated high school, and then it was kind of downhill from there. And I think for Amanda and also for the gentleman caller, that's probably very true, and it affects you. But the thing that I love about this play is that even though it was set in the 1930s, and written so long ago, this could be your next-door neighbors. You will absolutely recognize the mother who wants to control her children and has opinions about everything, and the children who want to please their mother but are kind of fighting with their mother at the same time. So it's amazing that Tennessee Williams could write a play that still is so resonant with what we're going through today.
How much research do you do on a character like this, or do you just take your direction from your director?
Well, I'm very fortunate to have this amazing director, so I feel like I'm, you know, in very capable hands, but I love the research. That might be my favorite part. And things that Sydney wanted us to think about are not only the historical research and driving by where Tennessee Williams lived in St. Louis to get an idea of what that home was like, but things like, you know, this may sound a little strange, but a lot of actors like to think of animals that they're playing. I won't tell you my animal, but if you knew it, you might see little flashes. And it's just these little tricks that you can use to give yourself some more life, some more interest. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff. There's a lot of me walking around my house pretending to be different animals till I find the right one. And I haven't been carted off to the loony bin, so, you know, luckily my husband's very patient.
That's
and
right.
Also an actor.
And an actor, so he gets it.
Yeah, that's one I hadn't heard of. I'll have to think of that if I were to do another role. But I know there's a lot of backstory that performers like to fill in about the characters. And I would imagine with something like this, a lot of that's furnished.
Well, a lot of it is and a lot of it isn't. You have to be careful because with a play like this, it is a fictionalization by an author of his life.
Right.
So you have to be really careful when you look at biographical information about Williams because it isn't, like with the father. Father was still living there at this point and for all of William's life in St. Louis. So you have to be careful about looking at his history we spend a lot of time, and I spend a lot of time on the history of the period. You know, the play is 1936 in our world, and so that's the middle of the Depression. It's as things were starting to look like they might turn, but weren't really turning yet. I mean, 34 and 35 were considered the worst years of the Depression. And so we're looking at a lot of Depression-era stuff, whereas when Tom's telling the story, it's at the end of World War II, and he's looking back on a very different, I mean, a lot changed in those 10 years in the United States.
Yeah.
So the Depression plays a lot into this play and that era. So we spent a lot of time on that, and we spent a lot of time in rehearsal just talking about Amanda, Tom, Laura, gentleman caller who actually has a name, Jim, who, you know, and their histories. And as Laurie said, the gentleman caller's best years were in high school, but he's very aware that that was true and wants to turn it around. I think Amanda's in a very different place, but she's also been, I mean, he's been 6 years out of high school where he was the hero of everything. But I also think that the gentleman caller has become that archetype of the guy whose best years were high school or best years were college and kind of stuck there. But Jim has a plan for getting out of there. We don't, of course, ever know if he did, because it's not someone that Tom clearly stayed in touch with, although he admired him. So, but Jim has lots of plans for moving on, just like Amanda, plans and provisions, always trying to figure out how to solve the next problem. So we spent, when I work, I spend a lot of time one-on-one with the actors working on their characters, talking about them, figuring out their history, so that we have our very own little ground plan for where we're going with them. And it kind of saves time in rehearsal rather than trying to figure it all out in the moment of the play.
Sure. Tell us a little bit about the other performers. We have Antonio Rodriguez as Tom.
Yeah, Antonio is terrific. I have worked with him a couple times. And he's done a lot of work in St. Louis, and he's working in Chicago now. I was thrilled to be able to bring him down. He's a really wonderful, wonderful actor, and we're having a great time with him. He has won a few Kevin Kleins and Circle Awards in St. Louis, so as has Laurie, and as has Betsy, who is playing Laura. Betsy is, I have also worked with Betsy. She's terrific. We just are really fortunate. We bonded as a group really fast.
And I would think that would be important in a production like this.
Yeah.
You can't do it without it. But I feel like they're my family.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It really just, I mean, we landed down here. And there's also, I mean, I do think that being in a place where none of us live makes that bonding kind of happen faster, although it can also backfire and blow up in your face. Because we're together probably more than we would be if we were all going home to do our regular lives.
Right.
And Michael Ferguson, who's the gentleman caller, is a student at Webster, where both Laurie and I went. He did a small role for me last summer in Inherit the Wind in St. Louis, where Alan played William Jennings, Matthew Harrison Brady, letting history get in the way, you know.
Yeah.
He was amazing to work with. So when I found out I was doing this, I called him in immediately to audition, and it worked out well. He's just got a great energy for the gentleman caller.
Cool. So this is coming up. Again, the preview night is next Thursday, July 20th, and the show then opens officially on Friday the 21st, runs through July 29th. You can get information or order your tickets at eventshannibal.com, or you can call the box office If they're not there, you can leave a message. They get right back to you. The Bluff City Theater at 212 Broadway in Hannibal. And you get a chance to see these two amazing people's work, as well as the rest of the cast and the Glass Menagerie. I guess classical American literature, drama. It's
one of the most perfect plays I've ever read. And I tell you, the thing I forgot is how funny it is. There are some beautiful poetry and some poignant, heartbreaking moments, but it's really hopeful and really there are a lot of good laughs in it. Yeah. So if you don't get a laugh, then call me and I'll give you a foot rub. It's a good one.
Could I just get the foot rub anyway?
Nope, you gotta tell me. You gotta fib to me and say you didn't.
Okay, I'll do that. So I usually sit right in the front row, so you'll know if I'm laughing.
Okay.
But anyway, again, that is happening. EventsHannibal.com, or you can call the Bluff City Theater box office. You can go to their website and get all the information and find out more about Glass Menagerie at the Bluff City Theater. Now that is their final show of this summer, and it's going to be a doozy. Thank you both for coming. I appreciate
it.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim.
Sydney Grossberg-Runga and Lori McConnell and the rest of the cast. And say hi to Joe for me, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much.
We will take a break. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Talk Radio 930 WTAD at 940. I'm Jim Dewey, and I'm still not Mary Griffith. Denver Echternkamp, my guest now, and we want to talk about this monster truck event that is coming to Quincy Raceways next week. Denver, I assume you're in charge.
Well, unfortunately, yeah, I'm in charge, among other things. But, yeah, we're putting on a show. We got approached by a lot of people last year wanting us to do a show. Not necessarily wanting us to do a show in Quincy, but wanting to know when our truck was going to be in Quincy because we're from Quincy.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, nobody was planning on doing a show, so we put on the show last year. We got a lot of good feedback from it, and everybody's asking us if we're going to do it again. So we're here doing
it
again
and going to
try and go bigger and better.
I would imagine it takes a lot to put on this kind of a show.
You know, it does, but, you know, being from here, it's been easier to get a lot of people to jump in on the bandwagon and kind of help out. You know, Fergie's given us cars, and Altorfer's given us equipment to build the track. You know, and the track coming through and providing us with things we need. Water D&L Excavating's giving us water truck to water down the track and everything. So that's, when you know people, it makes it a lot easier for the town to kind of pull together. And probably a lot of people that are going to go to the show don't realize that there's a lot of businesses out there that are kind of throwing in the hat to make this thing happen. You know, Pogues is thrown in for some radio sponsorship. And Quincy Auto Supply, their new auto supply business out there on Broadway, and you know they threw in right away, you know, trying to get their name out there and trying to make this thing a bigger process. So.
And these shows are wildly popular.
Yeah, they are. You know, and people ask me all the time, you know, why I do what I do, but the monster truck industry is really a lot bigger than most people realize that it is. I mean, it's really a multi-billion-dollar a year industry. If people really start looking into it and seeing how big and how massive it is, it's grossly popular. Actually.
I don't follow it, but I recognize some of the names of these trucks that are coming next week.
Right.
And did this start as a hobby for you, or how did you get started in something like that?
It was about 15 years ago or so. I've always been into four-wheel drive trucks, you know, as a kid, whatever. I was just always into four-wheel drive trucks. And obviously, if that's what you're into, the natural transition, that a monster truck is like the god of monster of a four-wheel drive truck. So that's what you're going to gravitate to. And I was always I went to shows, watching on TV. And then I had the more you go to these shows and meet all these people, you kind of end up being a groupie, I guess. But if they can see that you have some common sense and you're not just somebody wanting to hang out, you know, you talk to them, you get to know them. And I got the opportunity to drive a truck with somebody else for a while, and it turned into a few years of it. And I was good. I was popular, I guess. And of course I loved it because it's what I like to do. And you know, when that kind of fell apart and we took a few years off, and I missed it. I was still involved with a lot of the industry. I still knew a lot of the people. And I just decided, you know, I'm kind of in a position in my life where, and I'm at an age where I can kind of try and have a little fun if I would. And I just decided to do it for myself and go after it again. So
this is actually competition, right?
Oh, yeah.
So what's the contest?
There's racing. There's head-to-head racing. It's like elimination. So, obviously, if you lose, sometimes we'll have a fast loser come back, depending on how many trucks you have there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you reward a winner. And then we'll have a wheelie competition. There's several different things you can do. We're not going to do everything at our show because it would take hours. There's a wheelie competition, and a lot of that's based off crowd response. Whoever gets the most claps, then or the most screams and roars, that's they'll vote that person the winner. And then freestyle is kind of the same thing. Sometimes we'll have a judge on the ground that kind of knows the technical things between. There's a lot of times you'll go to certain shows where a more popular truck maybe doesn't necessarily put on as good a freestyle, but since he's the popular guy,
right,
he'll get a lot of the crowd roars. Right. So they'll have some judges maybe to do some of the technical stuff that knows, okay, well, that maneuver was harder than this maneuver, and he should get awarded a few more points for doing that, So.
So you kind of get in style points, you get
right
for some of that kind of competition, and I imagine there are some rules as far as what can or should not be on your truck?
Oh, yeah. We're limited to 575 cubic inches. We're limited to 10% overdrive on our superchargers, and then we're limited to an 871 supercharger, which a lot of people
I have no idea what you just said. You could be making that up.
No, it's all facts. But other than that, we can pretty much do what we want. Now, there is a certain amount of safety equipment that we have to have on the truck. We have to have a flame-out system. Like my truck last year, I blew the engine in my truck racing last year, and it caught on fire, but I can just pump the flame-out system. It's like a fire extinguishing system that's built into all the trucks. We have safety harnesses and containment seats that are built to fit only us, or if there was somebody that was exactly my size, they would fit in my seat. So it's really safe. The roll cages, certain aspects of the roll cages have to be built a certain way to meet a criteria, and things that might break on the truck, like the drive lines, if they break and we're upside down, they would fly off. We have to build a containment device along the sides of the drive shaft to hold the drive shaft to the truck if they break, and then like sway bar arms, things like that will break. So we have to strap
them. You don't want
them.
Stuff flying off and hitting the audience.
Exactly.
Or the drivers.
Or damaging ourselves. Something could fly up into the truck even.
Yeah, that's true.
And, and they have to be strapped to the truck. So if they break, they still stay attached to the truck. So
okay. I imagine a lot of that came about trial and error throughout the years.
Yeah. I mean, monster trucks started in the early 70s, late 60s, and it was, it is what it is. It was a bunch of cowboys out there just throwing a bunch of stuff together off their tractors and putting a truck body on top. And as one cowboy pushed the next cowboy farther and farther to push their truck harder, stuff would start breaking. Well, then as people would get hurt or they could see that somebody could get hurt, then they would develop, a safety criteria to help that out. And it's really, and we get asked this a lot because it looks like it's very rough and very dangerous, but I've been around different types of motorsports. I would rather be in my monster truck than a lot of other types of motorsports. I mean, you're pretty safe in there.
You talked about sponsors who help you promote the event and help you, as you said, with moving the dirt and parts and that sort of thing. Do you, as a driver, also have to get sponsors in to be able to essentially afford to do this?
Well, we try to every once in a while. It's kind of a tough thing, especially with the economy being what it is. It's hard for people to let go of money, and we understand that. I mean, I can do it on my own without anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough, but it can be done. But, like Powder Coat Plus is a local company. They powder coated my whole truck and everything. They came in and helped me out last year, and they're sponsoring on the truck. Fastlane Signs and Graphics does all my wraps on my truck. Essentially, the truck is a big – the paint on the truck is just a big sticker, and it's wrapped around. They do all my wraps on the truck, and there's been several other places that help me out with things.
I would imagine part of that, too, is more a select audience maybe than like NASCAR or some other motorsports.
Right. And I've had the opportunity to do some Monster Jam stuff where it'd be televised on TV. And when I try and kind of sell myself to people, the thing with like NASCAR, everybody looks at NASCAR as being so huge, but really, if you think about it and you watch a race, the car is so small on the track when it's actually on the screen, and you're sharing that screen with 30 other cars most of the time, and it's hard to get seen. Whereas a monster truck, when it's on TV, you're on TV for a minute and a half by yourself.
Yeah.
And the only thing to look at on that screen is that truck, you know, so if your name's on the side of it. But it's kind of a lure, you know. I mean, a lot of people still look at NASCARs, and probably as a whole, NASCAR is bigger, obviously, than monster trucks. But NASCAR over the last several years has really lost spectatorship, and it's kind of slowing down, whereas monster trucks has grown since day one, and it's continued to grow. Yeah. So
that strikes me as just in the way it's grown, similar to like MMA fighting.
Right.
You know, boxing is almost, it almost seems non-existent anymore on TV, but MMA is on all the time. And of course, pro wrestling is, is pro wrestling. I mean, it's grown over the years, but.
Yeah. And it's a lot of times it's just venues. There's so many places you can have monster truck events.
Right.
You know, but if you searched it, if you Googled it, I mean, you could probably find at least 15 monster truck events every weekend of the year somewhere in the country.
Yeah, well, you start doing it at locations like Quincy Raceways.
Right.
There are racetracks like that all over the country, and there are even some indoors. I mean, they do things like this in the dome down
in the winter.
St. Louis.
Yeah, we can run our truck every weekend somewhere if we wanted to. I mean, throughout the winter it's inside, and you know, of course, on nicer weather it's outside. But and I mean, if this year I've talked to some other local tracks around the states, and if Quincy goes over exceptionally well this year, I'm trying to work on like a 6-race series next year for myself,
and
then let Quincy be the ending race so everybody will run, push it just a little bit harder.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, with this being my hometown, I would want my hometown track to be the bigger race where everybody's going to try a little bit harder. But, I mean, we'll see what happens. You know, I didn't get into this wanting to be a show promoter. You know, I just wanted to run my truck, but as it worked out, it's not such a bad deal. You know, it might work out pretty good. And it's fun. It's interesting. I always like doing different things. So,
yeah. Well, that'd be cool. I mean, that and it seems like maybe a natural progression to have a circuit. It would be what, like 12 weeks, one race every other week or something like that.
And, yeah. Or if we do it just throughout the nice summer month, if we only want it to be outdoor, if we don't want to run any indoor stuff. You know, if we want to run outdoors, we might start it in May, and May through July, or May through August or something. Spread it out a little bit, depending on the availability of the track, too, because a lot of these tracks will have stock car races and things. So,
let's talk about the audience. Where will they be sitting, and how many seats available? And
they'll all be in the grandstands. Of course, they have those air-conditioned booths up top, and which, I mean, I always thought, when I was a kid, went to races, I always thought those were like for special people or whatever, but I guess anybody can just go up there and sit. If you don't like the noise, or if you want a little bit of air conditioning, or maybe if you have a young child that you're worried about ears. Of course, we'll have earbuds and things on for sale out there if someone wants to get them, or I'd recommend just grabbing your own before you come out if you want. But on the grandstands, I think they're seating, if I remember, I think they're seating for 2,500 people out there.
Okay.
So there's, you know, there's...
decent-sized crowd.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And the way we're going to try and put the track on the track, there really shouldn't be a bad seat anywhere. You know, we're going to spread it around. We're going to make sure, like for freestyle, the different jumps and things that we'll want to hit, we're going to spread it around so everybody gets to see something. So everything isn't isolated down at one end, so the people sitting on the west side aren't going to get to see anything. You know, we're going to spread it around so everybody's covered.
Yeah, and of course, as soon as you get done, I imagine you got to clean it all up so that the racetrack's ready for their next event.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll be out there working Sunday. So,
again, we're talking with Denver Echternkamp, who is with the Monster Truck event coming out to Quincy Raceways next week. And is it two nights?
Two nights. It'd be Friday night and Saturday night. Pit parties from 5 to 7 both nights, and then the show starts at 7. Should run till like 9:30, I'm guessing.
And what's the pit party?
Pit party is before. We'll come out, we'll park all the trucks on the track. We'll kind of rope off a certain area of the track so people aren't just walking around everywhere.
Right.
And we'll have all the trucks parked out there. We got some rock bouncers coming in for kind of a sideshow type deal to give us a break a little bit. All those trucks will be parked out there. And all the kids can come up, see all the drivers. They can see the truck, ask questions. They can get autographs if they want. That way, it just gives them the chance.
Sure.
A lot of times you only get to see the truck from the stands, and you're a few hundred feet away from it. I mean, you can get up to it. You can touch it, you know, ask us, you know, why we do this and what this part does, what that part does. And And surprisingly, we get as many parents asking those questions as
sure.
many kids.
I would be one of them.
And I've said this before too. We get as many girls as we do boys. We get as many women as we do men that are interested in this stuff. We'll get doctors and lawyers all the way down to mm-hmm. a mechanic. I mean, it's a real diverse crowd that we get. There's no real specific stereotype of a person
right.
that goes to these events, which is surprising to me because when I started doing this, I see myself a certain way, and I'm like, well, that's all the people that are interested in this kind of thing. But it's really not. It's surprising the wide variety of people that you get that are interested in it. And they ask good questions. You know, the most popular question is, how do you get in that thing? You know, that's probably the number one question that's asked.
Step ladder or crane, right?
Right, but it's, you know, people really ask. They'll surprise you. You'll see somebody walking up, and you're like, well, you know, I wonder what they're going to say. And then they really come off with a good question. It's surprising you sit there and have a conversation with them. And I think they're surprised that you'll actually sit there and talk to them mm-hmm. for 10 or 15 minutes, which we don't mind. We're sitting there anyway.
Sure.
So, but it's a lot of fun. You get to educate people. They educate you. You find out what people are made of, so.
And one ticket price gets you into that whole thing, right?
Yeah, one ticket gets everything.
The party and the...
Yeah, there's other shows. We kind of searched around, different shows that we've been to and searched around what other people do during their shows. There's a lot of places out there that'll charge extra $5 for the pit party or thing. You know, we don't care. We're there anyway. We want the town to have a good time and get involved and get interested in doing. So it's just as easy just to throw all that in, just have one ticket price and make all it right. make it more accessible for everybody to do it.
Let's talk about those tickets. How much and where can people get them?
Tickets are on sale at both Hy-Vee grocery stores. They're on sale at Pogue Auto Plaza in Quincy, Pogue Chevrolet, and Pogue Dodge in Hannibal. And they are on sale at Quincy Auto Supply out in the Harbor Freight Building and on Broadway. And they're $20 a ticket.
Oh, that's not that.
No. And it's sometimes some places will have kids' tickets less mm-hmm. and adult tickets more. We just cut it right down the middle.
Right down the middle.
You know, one adult's going to bring a kid. It's all going to even out. And so.
All right. Well, Denver, we're out of time, unfortunately, but you have a safe and great event coming up next week. We look forward to talking to you next year when you get this whole circuit thing going.
I hope so, too.